Hi, this is Dr. Bill Meyer. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Dr. Bill Meyer Live. You can hear the show live every Saturday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., and there are many more podcasts for this and all our other faith radio shows available on our website. You can just go to myfaithradio.com. And thanks so much for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
He's a psychologist, an author, and a veteran broadcaster. But most importantly, he's a dad. Welcome to Dr. Bill Meyer Live on the Faith Radio Network. Stay tuned for a faith and culture connection, a biblical perspective on current events, and practical family advice with psychologist Dr. Bill Meyer. You can join the conversation by calling 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Now, let's join Bill Meyer live.
Well, it's definitely summertime in the upper Midwest. You heard your forecast there. Things heating up here in the Twin Cities. Looks like 87 for a high today. Of course, with the heat index, it's going to feel more like the mid-90s. Fargo should top out around 79. If you're listening to Faith Radio in the Fargo-Moorhead area, Sioux Falls looks like about 85 today. Waterloo area around 80. Duluth, 83, and the hot spot in the Faith Radio Network looks like Madison, Wisconsin. It'll be about 92 degrees today. So it's summertime. Get out and enjoy it. Stay hydrated. If you are particularly hot around, 3 in the afternoon today, just have your kid shoot you with a squirt gun. My kids have those industrial strength squirt guns, those big giant ones they like to use at the pool. But, when it's really, really hot, I just say, open up, let dad have it. It's a great way to cool off instantly on those extremely hot days. Well, we have a great program lined up for you today. If you've got teenagers or if you're a grandparent with teens, stick around because I'm going to be talking to an education expert about how technology influences teens' behavior. Dr. Kathy Cook, who's the author of Screens and Teens, Connecting with Our Kids in a Wireless World, is going to be joining me here in just a few minutes on the Faith Radio Network. First up, though, today, I have to admit, my heart is grieved today by the death of those four Marines at the hands of a Muslim extremist in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And about 2 hours ago, a U.S. Navy spokesman confirmed that a male Navy petty officer who was wounded in that attack has succumbed to his wounds and has died. Of course, that attack on Thursday at the Navy Operational Support Center in Chattanooga. So the death toll from the shootings is now 5. I have a lot of love for the U.S. Marines and for the U.S. Navy. My grandfather was a 32-year Navy veteran, fought in both World War I and World War II, and retired as a lieutenant commander. And then one of my very best friends is a chaplain, a U.S. Navy chaplain, who is a captain in the Navy. And as you may know, if you're in the military or have been, the Marine Corps doesn't have its own chaplains. They actually utilize Navy chaplains on the Marine bases. So my friend Steve serves both the U.S. Navy and the Marines. Steve has a Navy uniform and a Marine uniform, depending on what his particular assignment is at any given time. And so whenever I hear stories like this, and I know all of us just, I think, have been grieved by this. Our hearts go out to the families of those Marines and now this Navy officer. And My friend Tony Perkins at the Family Research Council had an interesting observation about the shootings. And in his Washington update, he said, as these families grieve, a lot of the focus will undoubtedly be on the vulnerability of our brave men and women, especially in places like this recruiting station and other smaller military installations, where the government refuses to let our troops protect themselves. Did you know that? One of the starkest images from the rampage on Thursday, according to Tony, was a small white no firearms sign at the station door. Like a lot of places, this marine office was a gun-free zone, which made its occupants sitting ducks for attacks like this one. Congressman Louis Gohmert of Texas, who is an outspoken supporter of the U.S. military, he had some very striking things to say about the shootings. And he said, the more the Defense Department refuses to acknowledge that radical Islam is at war with us, the more danger our military members are really in, even where they should be protected. Congressman Gohmert says, for heaven's sake, our military ought to be the ones who are able to defend themselves. But these rascals know that even at the recruiting stations, these are gun-free zones. He says the Senate needs to stop their opposition to the amendment to allow commanders that are over any military installation to provide procedures so they can have people armed at these places. He says, let's get the gun-free zones removed from military stations and let people defend themselves. Congressman Gohmert says, if you're in the military, you ought to be qualified to carry a weapon, and you ought to be trusted to carry a weapon. Let's pray the military recognizes that before more unnecessary blood is spilled. Man, you know, regardless of how you might personally feel about gun control, I'm guessing you could agree with Congressman Gohmert's point. Why in the Lord's name are U.S. military members prohibited from carrying weapons or having weapons in these recruiting offices? I mean, this is not the first time this has happened. We've had numerous incidents like this in the past few years. And you know what? I think we're going to see more because we've heard so much in the media. Many of the military and defense analysts have said, you know, there are lone wolf Muslim extremists all across this country. We heard about some in the Minneapolis area who fortunately were apprehended by the FBI a few months ago. And with this sort of thing going on, my oh my, why are we not letting these qualified, trained individuals, why weren't these Marines allowed to have weapons that could have defended themselves? So now we have five brave men, four Marines and one Navy officer dead because they weren't allowed to defend themselves. That white sign that Tony Perkins talked about at the station door, no firearms. It's just stunning to me. Well, I'd like to pray for this situation. Lord, my heart just goes out to these family members who have lost sons and fathers and husbands, brothers in this terrible attack. And Lord, I just ask that you would just bring your peace to those who are today just so sad by this loss. Father, you are indeed the author of all peace, and you tell us that we can come to you and be still and know that you are God. And for those family members who may not know you, I pray that this perhaps is an opportunity for caring believers around them to reach out, perhaps through the military community, perhaps through chaplains, that they can understand the depth of your love for them and that they can turn to you for comfort. And Father, I just pray for this entire situation with the U.S. government and these policies. Lord, I just pray that wise heads would prevail here, and that there would be a change in this policy, Lord, that somehow this might be the catalyst, the impetus for positive change, so that this does not happen again anywhere in this country. We thank you for every member of the U.S. military, both active duty and reserve, and those retired military veterans. Father, we just thank you for their service to this country, for their sacrifice, and we just ask that you would keep them out of harm's way both overseas, in faraway lands, and right here at home, Father, where in some cases, like these brave men, they were sitting ducks. God, send a group of your angels, a hedge of protection around each person who is in the U.S. military. We pray all these things in the mighty name of Jesus. Amen. Well, it's 11:14, and coming up next, we are going to talk to an expert on teens, and teens particularly when it comes to technology. Dr. Kathy Cook joins us up next to discuss teens and screens. Mom and Dad, Grandma, Grandpa, stick around. I know she'll provide some great information that will help us all understand both the benefits and some of the risks to screen time and the things that our kids are being exposed to on a daily basis. That's up next here on the Faith Radio Network.
The conversation continues right now, and we want to hear from you. Call us at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. Now, here's Dr. Bill Meyer again on Faith Radio.
Hey, and jot that phone number down, because this hour we're going to have a chance for you to win a copy of our guest's book. Her name is Kathy Cook, and Kathy is the founder and president of Celebrate Kids Incorporated, which is a Christian ministry based in Fort Worth, Texas. She is an internationally celebrated speaker and popular radio host. She's influenced thousands of parents and teachers and kids in 30 different countries through her keynote messages, her workshops, her seminars, and assemblies. And today, Kathy joins us to talk about her newest book, Screens and Teens, Connecting with Our Kids in a Wireless World. And Kathy, welcome to Faith Radio.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
It is such a blessing to have you today, and I know, obviously, in the past few years, there's been a lot in the media, a lot of concerns about some of the impact that technology is having on our young people, and we're going to dive into some of those issues. But first, let me just ask you to start off on the positive side of things. Obviously, technology has opened up whole new worlds for our young people. Let's talk about some of the good things about technology before we get into some of those bad things that I know you focus on in the book.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for starting with the positive. Certainly for all of us, it gives us a greater awareness of what's going on in the world. We can see the good that people are accomplishing worldwide and in our own country. And, of course, we can see the negative. We can see, you know, the tragedy in Chattanooga that you were just talking about, and we know about it instantly. We can pray instantly. We can be supportive instantly. So the World Wide Web and the information source that it is a positive. It can also be a negative if we allow it to overwhelm us. I tell parents all the time that if you raise your children with hope and you raise your children to understand that they were created by a God who intends for them to be a part of the solution, then we don't have to be overwhelmed and defeated by the dangerous things that are going on in the world, but instead we can step into that and be part of the solution.
I love that perspective, Kathy, and I think, you know, as some parents, we kind of have, I think, two sides of the issue here, and I'm guessing you would probably agree. We have some parents who just want to unplug everything. I mean, they want to move to a cabin in northern Minnesota and just say, you know, we're not going to let our kids have any technology, and they're not going to have smartphones till they're 25, and, you know, we're going to not let them on the internet. And of course, that's completely wrongheaded, because eventually that child is going to, you know, leave the home and go off to college or the working world. And if they don't have any experience with technology, they won't have learned any self-control, and then all bets are off as to what happens to them. That's one extreme. I think the other extreme is the parent who says, oh, I just don't get any of this. They throw their hands up in the air. It's just all too confusing to me. And they just say, you know, I'm just going to kind of let my kid do whatever, and not realizing all the risks that are out there. And obviously, you've cataloged a lot of these risks in your book. So how do we strike a middle ground between being, you know, one of these just over-controlling, live-in-a-bubble parents versus the more, I just don't get it, so anything goes, permissive parents?
Great question, Bill. You know, I think it's true for anything in parenting, right, that there's a balance. We would never let children eat, you know, burgers and fries for every meal, even if that's what they really liked. No matter the age of our kids or no matter what the issues have been, we've always had variety. We've always had, hopefully, eclectic things going on in our home and in the culture in which we're raising our kids. So the technology is no different. It's a balance. It's using it for good and not to do harm. It's teaching our kids discernment. It's teaching our kids right from wrong. And it's standing up for the biblical morality that we want for our kids and standing against the culture that might be outside our door and showing the kids, certainly, to have self-control and self-respect, respect for others. There's a lot of teaching that does need to take place. There's a lot of temptation out there. There's a lot of addictive nature to the technology, the adrenaline rush. Even when I play a simple game of solitaire on my laptop, I can want to play again and again until I win because I feel like I can win if I play again. And I have to be careful as a mature adult of not allowing it to absorb all of my time here on a Saturday or whatever. So all of us need to be careful. All of us need to be modeling. And we need to teach and not tell. And, you know, for the parents and the grandparents listening who really feel out of touch, man, I really get that. I don't think you have to understand all the technology as much as you need to understand your children. And get to know your kids. Have them turn it off at the restaurant table so that you can really have a conversation. And when they know that you still care about who they are, then I think they'll be listening to you better about the technology piece.
It's interesting. I mentioned last week on this program some new research, a big survey, and you may have seen this, a big survey of kids saying that many of these children were saying they're concerned about the amount of screen time their parents are spending and the amount of time their parents are on their cell phone. And I think about half of the kids in this, it was a large survey, about half of the kids said they felt their parents weren't really paying attention to them when they were on their smartphone. And a large percentage of those kids said that made them feel like their parents didn't care about them. And so, my goodness, what kind of role model are we setting, you know, for our kids if we're the ones that are addicted to these devices?
Absolutely. And the children and teenagers tell me all the time that they very much resent the double standard. They are more willing to turn their phone off and put it away when they see their parents doing the same thing. And a lot of parents who I've been working with and speaking to have admitted that they lose track of time. Like a dad innocently comes home from work, wants to check a site for maybe a score of a baseball game. Then he goes to his, you know, banking site to check maybe, you know, if a check cleared. And then he goes to a news site to maybe check what the latest thing is on some worldwide crisis. And before he knows it, he's used up all of his available time between dinner and bedtime. And he wasn't wanting to do that. It's just something that, quote-unquote, happened. So we need to become more aware and cognizant of what we're doing and that our kids are available for a small window of time between when we get home from work, if we're the working outside of the home parent, and bedtime. Absolutely. Honor our children, for sure.
Mm-hmm. I often talk about the fact that if we don't, you know, if our actions don't match our words, if our walk doesn't match our talk, our kids are going to see right through it. They're going to see us as hypocritical. They're going to see our rules as really arbitrary and meaningless. And that's not the kind of parents that God wants us to be. And I even got, you know, we have this policy in our family is no tech at the dinner table. And we can get into that a little bit later on because I know there's some research on that. But we have this policy. We've had it for some time. And our kids probably compared to their friends are a lot less plugged in, a lot less wired because we've set some pretty firm boundaries on that in our home. And yet this is like 2 weeks ago. So again, no tech at the Meyer dinner table, but in the middle of dinner, I get up to get an extra fork and my phone, I happen to have heard a text notification while we were starting dinner, and my phone happened to be plugged into the charger kind of near where the silverware was. So I sort of surreptitiously walked over just to kind of see who texted me and if it was something important. And my 10-year-old daughter, "Dad, you're on your smartphone." And it was like, oh, I've been caught. I've been nailed. And so, yes, even I have a problem with this, and I know a lot of parents have more than a problem. They have an addiction to it, and, man, what are they teaching their kids? What are they modeling for their kids? They're showing them that pretty much life is all about a screen and technology and social networking and being connected at all times, and that is not the message we want to send.
I sure hope not. Absolutely.
I have a friend. Who admitted something last week, and this kind of broke my heart, Kathy. And maybe you've heard a parent say this before, but she said she was going to hug her kids. Maybe she was getting ready to leave, and she has an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old. And when she went to embrace the two of them, she realized that she couldn't put their arms fully around them because she had her smartphone in one of her hands. And I think all of a sudden it hit her. And this is a woman who I do think has an issue, because she's got notifications going off every 30 seconds from Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and everybody else. And she kind of lives for this. But at least she was willing to admit, oh, man, I couldn't even fully embrace my children because I had my device in my hand. That's sad, and it's not uncommon, is it?
It's very common, sadly, for children, teens, and parents. I tell parents all the time, put your camera down, which is in your phone. It's so easy to be distracted, and it's one of the lies, you know, that, you know, I've got to pay attention to everybody, and everybody has to pay attention to me. And especially for those listening who are saved, you know, for those of us in the family of God, everyone's important. Everyone's created in God's image. And we should not need man to convince us that we're worthy of love by the like factor on Facebook. And, you know, you can turn off your notifications on your phone. There's so many things you can do so that you are fully present and loving and embracing and raising your children and not letting technology raise your children. That, of course, is a real tragedy.
Mm. Now, we've just got about 2 minutes left before the break, Kathy, and I know maybe we'll just start to unpack this question, but in your book, Screens and Teens, you say that today's teens are stressed out, tired, tech-addicted, and overwhelmed. So describe the picture for us there.
Yeah, they're on technology too late into the night. They're not sleeping well because we're allowing them to have their phone in their room, which is very foolish. We're overwhelmed by all the information that's available, all the news that's available, all the posts that are available on different social media sites that we're trying to pay attention to. We're afraid we'll disappoint someone if we don't like their post. What if I post and no one likes my post? We're overwhelmed by all of that, and we're not teaching the kids how to sift and sort and separate themselves from all of that. And so that is a theme in my book. It's one of the definite issues that, and we have to be careful of that too as adults, I think.
And I've heard some, you may have heard about the research on sleep texting.
Yes.
Which just amazes me. They actually found, they had researchers check the records, the text records of kids, teenagers in particular, and even middle schoolers, and they found that in the middle of the night, at 2 and 3 and 4 a.m., they were receiving texts, and they heard the notification in their room. They sort of, in a half-awake state, sent some, you know, garbled gobbledygook message to their friend. They actually had a record of these things. And, man, talk about interfering with the sleep cycle. We're not, in our family, there ain't no mobile technology in the bedroom. And that's going to be a firm rule for us. And perhaps maybe it could be a rule for your family as well. Well, our guest is Dr. Kathy Cook, and her book is called Screens and Teens. We'll be back in just a second.
It's Dr. Bill Meyer live on Faith Radio. Get ready to join the conversation. Now let's join Dr. Bill Meyer live.
Welcome back. So great to have you with us today here on the Faith Radio Network. My guest is Dr. Kathy Cook. She is the author of Screens and Teens, Connecting with Our Kids in a Wireless World. Boy, this is a book that you want to have for your bookshelf at home. If you're a parent, a grandparent, if you are in youth ministry, I would highly recommend you get this new book from Kathy. In fact, we've got 3 copies to give away. And if you call us in the next 30 minutes or so, give us your contact info, name, address, phone number, email. What we will do is put you in the drawing. At the end of the hour, we'll draw for the 3 copies and send you one of these copies of Screens and Teens. And Kathy, before we get back into the book, I have to mention we have a Faith Radio affiliate in Madison, Wisconsin. And I noticed that you are originally from Wisconsin.
I am. I'm an upper Midwest girl, for sure.
Where did you grow up and where did you go to school?
I grew up in Wauwatosa, a suburb of Milwaukee, and went to Wauwatosa East High School, the Red Raiders, and then went to Purdue University to earn all of my degrees, and ended up back at the University of Wisconsin in Green Bay as a professor. So I moved from Green Bay to Fort Worth to establish my ministry 24 years ago. But I still very much appreciate the Madison area. I've been to Rochester, Minnesota several times, and my brother was on the faculty at UW-Madison. So I'm familiar with that whole area and the beautiful lakes and the solid people of the upper Midwest. Appreciate all of you so much.
Okay, I have to ask you, though, you've been in Dallas for many years. Are you still a Packers fan, or are you now a Cowboys fan?
Oh, gosh, no. I am a Packer fan. I bleed green and gold. my family would disown me if I was anything but a Packer fan.
Do you have one of those Packers
the cheese head?
Yeah, the cheese heads. Yes.
I don't own a cheese head that I can wear on my head, but I have cheese head earrings and cheese head jewelry. So it's in cheese head coasters. So you know, it's as close as I can get, I guess.
I love it. I love the Packers as well. But I also love the Vikings, so okay, there you go. We've got some great teams up here in the upper Midwest. All right, getting back into your book, you say something that I think is really, really critical. You say the use of technology is a primary reason that teens' beliefs and behaviors are changing. Flesh that out for us, if you would.
Oh, man, I would love to. That was really the impetus for the book, was beginning to see kids, for instance, kids arguing more than parents ever thought that they would argue. And raising children well and raising them to be cooperative members of a family, but then ended up having kids complaining and arguing all the time. And I began to watch and see, you know, what's going on with that and what's causing that. And one of the lies that I address in the book is the lie that I deserve choice. So as an example, most of the technology or all of the technology that we use is drop-down menu driven, right? You've got your email and your cell phone, your digital camera, TV, cable, movies at the movie theater. There's so many choices available. And those of us who are older understand that choice is a privilege, and we appreciate it when we're given a choice. Today's children are being raised by the technology that's wiring their brain to believe that choice is their right. And so when we say we're having meatloaf, they complain. Or when we say we've got to leave the house at 8, you know, to drop Billy off at soccer practice and go and get the car washed, and they're like, I don't want to wake up at 8.
Mm.
Well, I didn't give you the option. We're leaving at 8. Kids, even in good homes, if you will, are pushing back against the lack of option, okay? And I'm saying to parents, for instance, you're not a short-order cafeteria cook. You know, make spaghetti and serve it. And if they're not in the mood for spaghetti, frankly, they can go to bed hungry.
Yep.
And we have got to take back from our kids, you know, that belief that they rule the world through the choices that they demand. And I'm not saying that we don't give them choice when we can give them choice, but they certainly don't deserve it. Now, here's something else, Bill, and I wonder if you'll agree with me. Because the technology is wiring the brain the way that it is, I like to say to young people, it's not your fault that you want choice.
Mm.
You know, and I say all the time to parents and teachers that if I was their age, I would be like them. And I say that with humility, and I have compassion for them because their brain has actually been wired, just like your brain and my brain, they were wired by what we did when we were children. The same thing is happening to our youth today. And even as adults, you know, go to the grocery store. Come on, the cereal aisle. It's ridiculous.
Mm.
You know, I grew up with 3 or 4 types of cereal and was satisfied. Now you go to that part of the grocery store, and it's another reason we're overwhelmed is we want all the choice, but we don't know how to process it. So that's one of the lies. I deserve choice. And if we don't teach kids, you know, right from wrong and how to choose wisely, how to choose with being other-centered, if they don't know themselves well, they don't know how to choose well, that's part of the teaching that I believe needs to be taking place in our homes.
Now, there's a term in clinical psychology called decision neurosis, and it obviously has become, I think it's on the forefront now because of technology. Can you kind of explain what decision neurosis is and how, obviously it's affecting adults, but how it may be affecting teenagers as well?
You tell me, Bill. Is it the inability to choose?
Yeah. Well, basically, it's saying that we we are in a place where there are so many choices that the anxiety level just becomes overwhelming. And it's like, well, I could do this, or I could go on this side, or I could choose this right now. And I've got, as you said, that drop-down menu, but that could go over here. And this friend is texting me, but after a while, you go bonkers.
Exactly.
And you think about, you know, the spiritual disciplines of simplicity and solitude, and how without simplicity and solitude, at least at some place in our lives, we can't stop down. We can't draw near to the Lord. So it seems to me, and have you talked to parents that are saying that their teenagers are getting anxious about all these different choices they have?
Excellent. I'm glad you brought that up. Just wanted to make sure that we were on the same page there. One of the reasons that the choice is anxiety-producing is that another lie that I address in the book is that I deserve to be happy all the time. They've bought the lie from technology that entertainment is the culture at large, and that they have a right to do what they want when they want to do it, when they want to do it now. They deserve to be happy. You know, they can buy one song from a website and have it in a second and listen to it. You know, I had to go to the store and buy an album if I didn't want all the songs. These kids believe that they can multitask and be happy. They can X out of the thing that's boring them or that they're going to lose, and they can go to a different platform and be happy. So not only do they think that they have a right to choice at all costs, they choose with the standard of happiness, which is extremely dangerous, especially if you're a saved kid. When I talk to teenagers who in a Christian setting, I say, look, you know, I haven't found a Bible verse yet, and I never will, that says happiness is our right. You know, we're called to be blessed and to be a blessing. And, you know, we're called to joy and peace and hope and patience. Oh, I love talking to kids about the lack of patience that I see in our culture and where that's all coming from. So I think it's a perfect storm of all that's going on that's causing that decision-making fear and anxiety. I have to be careful, for instance, of what if I order a steak and I'm halfway through the steak thinking, you know, I wonder if I should have had prime rib. Right?
Yes.
And even as adults, we're dissatisfied and discouraged and wondering if we made the right decision.
Now, how do you think, what is a good way for a mom and dad to teach their kids, a Christian mom and dad, to teach their kids the difference between happiness and contentment? Because in the Bible, I mean, obviously, contentment, we're told over and over again by Paul, and he was certainly content in some very difficult circumstances, but somehow learned through his relationship with God, his trust in Jesus Christ, to be content regardless of what was going on in his immediate surroundings, his immediate circumstances. So how can we teach our kids in this plugged-in world to be content?
Such a great question. We need to let them know that old things still have value, that just because something is old doesn't mean that you replace it. We don't let them line up at midnight at Best Buy because something new is going to be opened, you know, at 8 a.m. It's ridiculous. We teach gratitude, and we cultivate gratitude. We make sure that gratitude is a part of our family value, and that it's not, you know, a forced thank you note for a Christmas gift that mom's, you know, standing with you until you get it done, but it's a part of you. It's your essence. It's not, gratitude is not something you do. Gratitude is something you are, grateful as a person. To talk about joy, to make sure we model that. I really believe things like when you buy a child a new toy, they choose an old one to give away. When your child gets a new pair of shorts, they choose a pair that doesn't fit them anymore, that they'll never wear again, and they give it away. That every time that you buy a new dish for the kitchen, you look to see, hey, you know, I haven't used this bowl in a year. Let me give this away. And we make sure that as a family, we serve those who have less than we have. We talk about the difference between want and need. That's another issue for contentment. You know, do I need that or do I want that? That's huge vocabulary. And we need to be careful as parents and grandparents, what do they hear us say? Do they hear us say, I need coffee? Or do they hear us say, I want coffee? And then I think, you know, bottom line, Bill, let's cultivate a relationship with Jesus Christ. You know, did he or did he not come to fulfill all of our needs?
Right.
And is Psalm 23 correct when it says that, you know, we shall not want? He's our shepherd. We shall not want. There's nothing. Because he, in who he is and in what he does, we have everything we need. So do we cultivate that? And do we really have devotions as a family that matter? And I love what you said before about solitude and simplicity. I talk in the book about the need for quiet, because in quiet, those moments of boredom that our kids are so desperate to escape, it's in the boredom and in the quiet that ideas in our mind sift and sort, and wisdom can be the result of that. But if we're constantly feeding ourselves with more and more and more and more and more, then we won't be satisfied. And I think it grieves God. Mm-hmm. I think it grieves God, and I think it increases the anxiety and the stress, which is what causes the conversation at home to not be pleasant. What do you think? That was a mouthful I just dumped on you.
No, that was great, and it really it speaks to our situation. You know, I've wondered sometimes how much of the growing up process, the maturity process, the ability to abstract, and I know as an educational psychologist, you get this, and the ability to abstract develops over time as a child matures, and for some, they never really fully get to that place, depending on, you know, their development. But I've often wondered, is it possible for a younger child to really get ideas like contentment and delayed gratification? Obviously, we can model that. We can talk about that. We have three kids. One of them is a giveaway kid. I mean, this little girl, she's eight, and she wants to make sure that she's got money to give in the offering, her own money, every Sunday. And she gives stuff to her friends, and she makes them little presents and crafts. And then our oldest, and this is probably classic oldest child, our oldest, who is 12, he is more of a, I don't want to use the word hoarder, but I will. He's not listening, by the way. He doesn't like to give stuff away, even stuff he's, you know, had for years, which really doesn't have any sentimental meaning or isn't significant. When we, you know, we have a garage sale or the community, you know, we have this thing where we give away to this local ministry, and he's like, no, I want to keep that. I want to keep, and it's like, you're never going to use that in your life again. But for some reason he wants to hang on to it, and I know he feels loved. I know he feels secure. So where does that come from, and how do we work with him on that?
Yeah, great question. So there might be some learning style issues going on there. There's a particular type of person who likes to collect and values the differences and similarities among objects. That could even be part of it. It's a great question, man. We'd have to really dig deep. I think that, again, I'm a big believer in teaching kids stewardship and stewardship of space and time and stuff. And I just think from the get-go, we teach that. And even if they don't like giving something away, I think that they need to. That would be my gut, is that you go up to your son and you prepare him and you give him 48 hours notice that, you know, he needs to choose something, because this is a value that our family has, that we give from our prosperity, you know, to those who don't have what we have. So I think understanding that's really a key. I don't know. Sometimes when kids go on their own mission trips and kids go to the homeless shelter and kids collect the winter coats for the homeless in Minnesota and kids are involved and the family serves together, that allows you to have that conversation that maybe needs to be had. But I agree with you that there are different personalities, certainly birth order and gender and all kinds of things that go into that. And yet, as a family, you have a right to a policy, and he's a part of your unit as a family, so he's obedient to what you and your wife have decided is best.
Our guest is Dr. Kathy Cook. She is the author of a new book called Screens and Teens, Connecting with Our Kids in a Wireless World. It's 11:46. We're going to take a quick break, and if you're a mom or dad, or you're in youth ministry and you'd like a copy of this book, give us a call right now. Give us your contact information. 877-93-FAITH, 877-93-FAITH, and we will take that info down at the end of the hour. We'll have one of three copies to give to you, compliments of the Faith Radio Network. Stick with us, more with Dr. Kathy Cook up next.
Now, back to Dr. Bill Meyer live on Faith Radio.
Welcome back. My guest is Dr. Kathy Cook. She's the author of Screens and Teens, Connecting with Our Kids in a Wireless World. Kathy's website is celebratekids.com, celebratekids.com. She is the president of that particular ministry. It's based in Fort Worth, Texas. If you want to learn more about Kathy's material and her speaking, and I should ask you, Kathy, do you have any plans to be speaking in the Upper Midwest in the next few months or in the next year?
I'll actually be in Rochester for a Hearts at Home convention in November, and there's information on my website or heartsathome.org. We come to the Mayo Clinic Conference Center every November, and I'm trying to think. I can't think of another time I'll be in the Upper Midwest, but my calendar is on my website, so people can check that out. I appreciate you mentioning that.
Oh, you bet. And Hearts at Home, of course, a great ministry. I had Jill on a few weeks ago on Mother's Day. She was our special guest that day, which was pretty appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I mentioned earlier, Kathy has a Wisconsin background, grew up in the Milwaukee area, and she actually was a professor of education at the University of Wisconsin in Green Bay. She's a diehard Packers fan. She does not have a cheesehead that she wears when she's doing counseling, but she does have cheesehead coasters and earrings, which is important, very important to have if you're a Packers fan.
Yes.
I love it. Now, Kathy, one of the things that I stress to parents, and I'm guessing you do too, is to have what some people might call clean time or a tech-free zone. I know there are some families, and of course, these families are the rarity. They're not the norm. But at the end of the day, when the family members come in, whether it's after school or after work, they have this big basket that's mm-hmm. sitting by the back door, the door that comes from the garage into the house, and everybody puts their mobile technology into that basket, and it stays there in quarantine for a certain amount of time, which they call clean time. Now, that may be in the afternoon when, you know, kids are doing homework and reading and might be right when, you know, dad comes home and there's a time to connect with dad. That might be during the dinner hour or after the dinner hour if you're going to have maybe a time of devotions or just kicking back as a family, playing a board game. For the families that you know that have incorporated that either tech-free zone in the house or clean time, what have you seen? What kind of changes have they told you that they've seen in their children and in themselves?
Yeah, longer conversations. Now, initially, you know, the first day or two, it can be really painful. So let's be honest, you know, the kids and even mom and dad, we can be, you know, pretty connected to those devices and eager to hear the buzz or feel the vibrations. So there can be this withdrawal thing that goes on. So the first couple of nights at the dinner table, it might be really painful. But what happens down the road, if you give it time, is conversations that last longer, stories that kids listen to, dreaming and planning for something like the weekend and then, you know, further into the year. And there are a number of kids who have actually said to their parents, I don't want my phone back tonight. Can you keep it all night?
Wow.
And they've thanked me and they've had great conversations to say, you know, I've had kids say I like myself better without my phone. They really do want, many of them do want us to take control and be the parent and say this is unhealthy. I like the line, I love you too much to allow you to be on that system this long. I'm taking it away, whether it be gaming or, you know, TV watching or whatever. We need to be the parent. So initially, longer conversations, deeper conversations, we get to know our kids again. And let me assure you that it's never too late. Even if you've allowed your kids to have a lot of technology for the last couple of years and you're listening and you're recognizing that, you know, you don't like what's going on in your family and you feel the disconnection, you feel the separation, you can have your family back. You can look them in the eye. You know, use me as the heavy if you want. You know, use this radio interview and say, hey, you know, I heard these guys talking and I think they were right and I want our family back. So we're making some tough decisions. We've all made some mistakes and we're going to go through withdrawal with you and we're going to make some changes. Let's admit that we've maybe not done it right, but let me tell you, it's never too late. You know, Bill, another clean zone that I really like is the car. I would love to see us turn off the radio, no pods in the ears, no handheld devices. Talk to each other. Look out the window. Be bored for an instant. Like I said before, quiet is really good for the mind. And kids tell me they love talking in the car because we are captured and we cannot leave.
And some of the best conversations I think you have with your preteen or your teenager are in the car. And part of that is there are some kids, and I think especially boys, that for whatever reason, and I think my son, my 12-year-old is one of these, for whatever reason that, you know, kind of face-to-face, mm-hmm. heart-to-heart talk makes him uncomfortable, and it's probably, it's developmental, but when we're in the car and he's in the back seat without a device, he starts sharing about his day, he starts asking me questions, even on road trips, we try to... You know, and I know some parents, they believe in, you know, you got to watch a DVD as you drive from California to New York. But we've said we don't have a DVD player in our car. We don't have a portable DVD player. I know some parents can't even believe that the Meyer family would drive coast to coast without a DVD player. It's just stunning to them. But we play the license plate game, and they have a game they play which drives me nuts. But they count the different colors of cars. So they have this competition where, you know, one kid has got, you know, white cars, one kid has got black cars, one kid's got red cars. And you know, sometimes they debate on, well, that truck had some red on it. But they've got these little, they're little pads, and they're, you know, they're, hey, well, look at that. Oh, wow, there's one over there. And then they have to decide, does a parked car count? And then the discussions that we have. We had a trip recently. We drove to North Carolina, and we were going through a variety of states on the way, and as we drove, no tech on, had some great, and we did actually, there was a point, I know we talked about, you know, turning off the music, but there was a point where I put on this Christian album by this group I just love called Unspoken, and I if you have not heard this particular band and their latest album, the lyrics are so deep and so profound, and the music's great. But it led to some great discussions with our kids about, do you know what he's singing about right there? Do you know what he's saying? And my daughter has remembered some of those conversations. And when the song comes on the radio now, she will even bring that up. Well, that's where the guy's talking about this. So, man, I love what you said, Kathy. Turn off the tech in the car. At least limit the amount of tech in the car. Hey, I hate to say this. We've only got about 3 minutes left. We've had such a great conversation. I'm going to invite you to come back at a future date because we have a lot more to unpack. But let me just ask you one other question, because you said something a minute ago that is so profound. In just the 2 minutes we have left, you said that some kids have told their parents, I feel better about myself without my device. Can you explain that?
Yeah, they admit that they are drawn into competitive battles of popularity that make them uncomfortable. They admit that they are stressed by whether or not they should compromise their values to like that post, or should they comment here, and what if they comment and somebody thinks their comment's ridiculous. They admit to the stress that the vibration or the ding creates in them. They don't like to be as connected as it appears they like. And when we step into that space and give them permission, you know, to turn it off or take it away, it gives them some freedom to be and to just hang and just relax. So I think that's what they're saying to us. And I really appreciate anybody who listens and tries that at home and sees what happens. I've enjoyed being with you, Bill. Thanks.
Oh, thanks. And I mentioned before, Kathy, and if we have you on again, we can get into this whole issue of Facebook depression and how so many teenage girls are defining their worth by how many likes they've received and how many shares their posts have received. And if they're not, you know, in the double digits or triple digits, they're somehow unworthy. And, oh, it just breaks my heart, and I'm sure it grieves you as well. So, it's tragic. Well, Kathy, I want to thank you again. Let me give your website one more time. It's celebratekids.com. celebratekids.com. You can learn more about Kathy's ministry. The book is called Screens and Teens, Connecting with Our Kids in a Wireless World. Just a wonderful book that every parent of a preteen or teenager, even a younger child, needs to have as you look forward. Kathy Cook, thank you so much for your time. May the Lord continue to guide you and direct you in your ministry.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed being a part of your show.
Dr. Kathy Cook, our guest here on the Faith Radio Network, thank you so much for joining us. My friend Neil Stavem is next with his Saturday edition of Connecting Faith, and I pray that you have a wonderful weekend. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Dr. Bill Meyer Live. If you'd like more information about this show, just go to myfaithradio.com and click on the program page for Dr. Bill Meyer Live.